I Suck at Dating with Dean Unglert and Jared Haven, an iHeartRadio podcast.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to an all-new episode of Help, Jared's Dogs Won't Stop Barking.
Oh, my this is God, Dean Unglert. Dude. It's terrible. Like, every time we're like, all right, let's record, Lois and Ethel are like, wah! You know what's funny? So I'm again at my in-laws' house, and they have there's landscapers around, and they literally, I heard the lawnmower start up right before I joined the Zoom. I'm like, you gotta be freaking joking. The dogs are gonna lose their minds. So perfect timing. Welcome to Help I Suck at Dating with Lois and Ethel losing their minds in the background.
You know, I can see how a lot of us would think it's a bad thing, but in my eyes, it's a good thing. Just like how sometimes there's like ambient restaurant noises going on when we record, it keeps this podcast the grassroots authentic self that we needed to always be.
Yeah, it really humbles us.
it humbles us, and you know, it lets all of our, you know, fellow sucky daters, the suck army, know that, you know, that's just life. Sometimes it gets in the way of the things you need to be doing.
Yeah, we're just pissing in the wind on this podcast. You never know what's going to happen. Dean's in a restaurant. My dogs are losing their mind. That's why people listen. They just want to know what's happening in our lives.
Jared, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about a lot of things. So we have a great guest that's coming up. We have a Dr. Jessica Shepherd, who's an OBGYN. Say that five times fast. And she's a women's health expert. And she's also the founder of Her Viewpoint, which is an online women's health forum that focuses on addressing taboo topics in a comfortable setting, which is fantastic. She's going to be coming up on the podcast a little bit later. We also have this article about can anonymous internet critics actually fix your online dating profile? I think this is actually something you and I can speak pretty well on, because we've had a lot of, quote, anonymous critics critique our dating life, our Instagram profiles, maybe not our dating profiles, so to speak, but like our overall relationship lives. So I feel like we can really speak well upon this. And of course, we have emails coming up later on in the podcast. This is something I wanted to talk about first, though, which is a brand new Netflix show. I don't know if you saw this, Dean, but it's called Sexy Beasts. It's coming out later this summer, I believe. But Sexy Beasts is a show that contestants, it's kind of like Love is Blind with a mix of The Masked Singer, if you've ever seen that show, where these contestants will show up in elaborate makeup and prosthetics in an attempt to answer an age-old question about love, which is, how much do looks actually matter? So these people get all dressed up, and I'm looking at a picture right now. It's like this super intricate prosthetic design on these people's faces, and it looks like their bodies too. So I'm not sure if you can really tell how, you know, much in shape they are, for lack of a better way of phrasing it. But like, this one woman has this mouse, and it looks like, I'm not even joking, it looks like it was something in How the Grinch Stole Christmas or The Cat in the Hat. Like, high-end Universal Studios types prosthetics. And these people are going on dates, and I'm not exactly sure how the whole show works, but I'm assuming at some point, after you get to know your furry friends, that they'll reveal themselves like Love is Blind, and you'll figure out if you're actually attracted to this person or not. So what do you think about this show concept, Sexy Beasts?
Caitlin showed me the trailer for it a couple weeks ago, and she was like, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I honestly thought it was pretty awesome. I don't know if it's, you know, I don't have my ear on the ground as far as the furry community goes. I don't know if the furry community is like, you know, disgraced and kind of a little upset by this, but.
Yeah, offended.
Offended, yeah. I mean, I can kind of see like why maybe they would be. I don't know. I think it's hilarious. It's just like you remember the show Love is Blind. It's basically like Love is Blind, except, you know, you're hanging out with this person, but then all of a sudden they take off their rat costume, and then you have no idea what they're going to look like underneath. I mean, I don't know. I think it's like one of those shows that you're definitely going to watch at least the first episode to like see if it's something that you're going to be interested in, just because of how weird it is. And then if it's good enough, you're definitely going to watch the rest. I find myself, I'm going to probably end up watching the whole thing, I think.
It feels a little weird to me. I like the idea of it, but like, how far are we going to go in today's society now to like have dating shows where you can't see the other person's face because you want to get to know their personality first, and then they'll reveal themselves? So I feel like all these TV producers now are like, okay, you know, Love is Blind is out there. We need to figure out some way to do that show, but not do that show. You know what I mean? Have our own thing. Let's put masks, but like not just regular mask on people when they go on dates, but like let's dress them like animals. Let's have a squirrel, a panda, an alien, a devil perhaps. And then we're going to put them on dates and it's going to be like a fetish type thing. But then they're going to take their masks off and really find out if they truly love each other with how they, if they're attracted to each other. I don't know. It's like, how far are we going to go? Like, what's the next thing? I don't know. Like, I don't know if I could take this show seriously. We got a mouse. We got an alien. Like, whatever. It's going to be funny, I guess. It'll be entertaining. Yeah, to be fair, I didn't think The Masked Singer was going to work, and I love that show. So I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. I'll probably be wrong about this show, but I don't know if I'm going to watch it.
You make a good point about the mask thing. It's like, yeah, they definitely could have just sent these people out with like regular masks on, like a, you know, like a masquerade ball type mask. But they're like, no, Goosebumps, you know what?
Remember that Goosebumps mask?
Like the Jason?
No, you remember? You never watched Goosebumps or read Goosebumps as a kid?
I read the books. I don't think I ever remember seeing
the green
shows,
mask,
though.
Bro, that it got stuck to her face and she couldn't take it off because it was, you know, obviously a possessed mask.
No, I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, no, I see your point. I see your point. I don't know. Did you watch, because Demi, who we're friends with, was just on Celebrity Dating Game.
Yep.
That show's been it's been on TV.
It's been on for a while. I think it went away for a while.
Right. But it was just, I don't know. Have you been watching it at all?
No, I haven't watched it. Like, I saw clips because Hannah was on it too, Hannah Brown. I don't think that's where she met her boyfriend, though. So obviously it didn't work out with every contestant she picked. But yeah, they had Hannah on it and then they had Demi on it. And I saw clips of both, but I didn't watch it. But I don't know. Did Demi find someone? Do we know these things?
I texted her when it was airing and I was like, tell me you went on a date with this girl. And she just gave one of, you know, like a Demi response, just like joking around. But it was, I mean, you're not missing anything. It's just another one of those shows. I feel like that you're right. I feel like just right now there's so many shows that are just so ridiculous, obnoxious. They're just, you know, throwing as much crap at the wall and hoping some of it sticks. It's what it seems like.
Hey, whatever entertains people, I guess. So our next topic is what we talked about before. Can anonymous internet critics actually fix your online dating profile? So this is an article from Inside Hook, or no, excuse me, it's just called Hook. I don't know what Hook is, I got to be honest. But hey, we like talking about it. When you're single and wildly unsuccessful at online dating, you might attempt the same dicey maneuver that Peter and many others have, which is post your profile on Reddit so that hundreds of strangers can critique it. Peter says, I really wanted to know, how am I perceived? He's a scientist in his late 40s. He lives in the Southeast. And like the other Reddit users quoted in this article, he spoke to them under a pseudonym. And he said, to me, that seemed to be important to do online dating. I needed to figure out how I'm perceived and how I project what I want to sell, for lack of a better term. He likens the act of desperation he took to Reddit to a market research. He says part of what prompted the decision was that after putting a good deal of effort into something, he's not used to such poor results. That's interesting. When Peter first offered up his profile to the subreddit for review, it was skewed, and rightfully so, he says. I did one thing wrong, Peter admits. I just had some pictures, and my height. The Reddit chorus, as they're called, chimed in to remind Peter that nobody can just have a blank profile. So with what he believed to be surgical precision, Peter reconstructed his entire dating profile, adding detail about some daredevil hobbies that he likes to take part in, some stuff about his job and his taste in movies, as well as upgrading his photos. So Dean, do you think this is something that more people should do? Anonymously post their dating profile on Reddit and see what people have to say about it?
I think it takes a special person to be able to open themselves up to that kind of criticism, because it really is. I mean, sometimes I'll see on Reddit, it's like, you know, do your best, roast me right now, Reddit. And you'll like click on the comments and it's just like so bad. And like, even if you have like this thick skin and you're used to like everything, some of that stuff, man, it's like, it's, and they're, you know, obviously like they're asking for it. And so people on the internet's always undefeated. These people are freaking ruthless and like hilariously just mean sometimes, you know what I mean? So, I think as long as you go into it knowing, that you're going to come out of it, maybe like a little sadder, that's not the worst thing in the world to do. I don't know. What do you think?
The problem with Reddit is that there is some really horrible people on Reddit who will just say the meanest things. And it's not always truthful. Like, there's always that adage, like that old saying where, like, the truth hurts. And so people feel like, you know, oh, I'm just being truthful, when in actuality, you're just being an asshole. So
yeah.
The problem is, I feel like Reddit people, because you're hiding behind a screen, we've talked about it numerous times, whether it be Twitter, Reddit, Instagram, I feel like Reddit's the worst in this, but they just say the meanest things. And it's not because they're being honest, it's because they just want to tear other people down. So, like, posting it on Reddit, I don't know, that's nerve-wracking. So, like you said, if you're going to do that, you better have some thick skin. I remember when I was on the show, not a dating profile, but even Instagram, it's like, you know... I used to post, and I wouldn't care about the photos that I posted, but I remember, you know, one photo would get such good engagement and then the next one wouldn't, be like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder why that is. And then, like, people would be like, oh, the lighting sucks on this photo, or like, oh, it's so blurry, I can't even see anything. I'm like, oh, wow, my pictures suck. Like, I really need to step up my game. So as you and I were kind of thrown into the fire, I guess people can do it if they want, post their stuff to Reddit, figure out what people are thinking about them, or at least their dating profile. But again, better have some thick skin.
Well, there's a guise to, like, the anonymity of it all, where it's like, you know, on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, your name or your handle is attached to it. But Reddit, it's like, you know, you are who you are. You're no one on Reddit, essentially, right? Like, you have no attachment between your Reddit personality and your real life personality. Or, like, there's no consequences you could face by being this person on Reddit, because you're never going to get it traced back to you in real life. Like, you know, it's so funny. It's kind of funny that you mentioned this too. Like, on Instagram, let's say I post a photo on Instagram, you know, it gets, you know, however many likes, thousands of likes, a couple hundred comments, whatever it is. And now I just, like, I feel like I'm used to that. And so when I'm, like, on Reddit and I'm, like, commenting on things, you know, like, I'm, like, not active, but, like, I'm semi-active. Like, I'll comment a little bit on, like, certain forums, whether it's, like, van life forums, or, like, I don't know, there's, like, some video game ones that I, like, pay attention to, or, like, Wall Street Bets type crap. And it'll get, like, no engagement. Like, no one will interact with it. And I'm like, wow, I forgot what this was like to be, like, a person. Cause, like, I've got no, like, wittiness about me, or like, you know, to a degree, sure. But, like, compared to the people on Reddit, I am at the very bottom of the pecking order. And so to, like, post something and get zero engagement out of it, not that that's what I'm posting it for anyways, but it's just, like, it's just a very humbling experience. And I think that's what Reddit is there for, is to kind of be that humbling, resource for a lot of people. And yeah, I mean, the roast me things, man. And it's like, it's interesting too. And maybe it's just the ones that I see, like the ones that kind of get upvoted to the top of the list. And that's, like, why they're on the popular page. But it's like, you know, like a slightly overweight person with, like, a big piercing in their nose and, like, a big tattoo on their neck. And it's like, of course you're going to be roasted for the things that make you look different. But it's just merciless, is really what it is. But the dating profile thing, could be beneficial, because it's like, okay, yeah, you're not going to obviously take every bit of advice word for word, but it is a nice way to get, like, anonymous feedback on the things that you think are either clever or, like, your photos that you look cute in. So, I mean, I could see that being a little bit more beneficial than the simple, like, holding a piece of paper saying roast me kind of thing, you know?
Totally. You could also ask your friends too. Like, I feel like a lot of people are nervous about asking their friends for criticism about their dating profile to make it better. But, like, that's what I would do first. I would ask my close personal friends, saying, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? See how you handle that criticism. And if you handle it fine and you want more critiques, go to Reddit and try it out.
I think you should just post your dating profile however you want to post it, because that's who you are and that's a reflection of you as a person. And so, like, by doing that, people are going to match with you based off of the things that you've done, which just kind of makes me maybe for more of a sincere connection at the end of the day.
Well, I think you should definitely
be yourself. Is that crazy to say?
Well, I agree with you somewhat, but I also think you have to put some effort into it. In order to put effort into it, I've always found that, you know, it's always beneficial for me to, like, bounce ideas off my friends, because that will, you know, have some creativity into it, compared to me, where I don't feel like I'm that creative on my own. And I'm like, oh, I guess I feel like when I just do things on my own, I don't do them as well as I possibly could, because I find I'm more creative when I'm in a circle or with my friends and be like, well, what about that? And then they say something and I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. But that actually gave me another idea. So I don't know. It all depends on how much effort you really want to put into it. I guess that's the point of the story. I have a question for you, though, because you said that you're active on Reddit. Have you ever responded to Reddit people talking about you from the show?
No, I mean, I'm familiar with the subreddit for the show. but I've never commented in it. I used to check it sometimes, like every once in a while, like a long time ago, but you know, I think it's just kind of like an ignorance is bliss thing at this point.
100%. Ashley used to check it. She doesn't check it anymore, but she used to read a lot of the comments on Reddit and it would bug her because, you know, they were just ruthless. Or like, I remember when we first got together, she was telling me that there were so many people on there saying that we were just doing it for fame and we weren't really in love and it was all fake and that like I lost my 15 minutes of fame. So I was just wanted to cling on to Ashley to try to prolong this. And I remember one time, this is before Ashley and I came out as a couple. We were dating, but we weren't public yet. And I might've told this story on the podcast before, but my friend who's very much active on the subreddit, she's a big reality TV buff. And she sent me a screenshot of somebody who commented on the Reddit saying, she said something along the lines about how one of her close friends was my best friend. And she told her that Ashley and I were only dating for the fame and that we weren't actually in love and we were going to break up in 2 months. And she said this to all the rest. She's like, I know Jared's best friend. And this is what the best friend told me because I'm friends with her. And anyway, long story short, my sister saw this and then found out who the Reddit person was, like found out who they were. And messaged them on social media and was like, why are you saying this about my brother? And she blocked my sister, deleted her comment. It was crazy. It was like, I can't believe that people just like say things and then get confronted about them and then are like, never mind, I was lying.
Wait, that's actually insane. And you know, the reason that they do that is because they get the attention for it, right? Like if you have like this juicy bit of gossip or whatever, that expands way outside of the internet too, just in general, like in person. If you got like a little bit of hot goss and you kind of like have people waiting on your every word. So that's kind of where that comes from. But at the end of the day too, it's like, it is human nature to like kind of be at least a little curious to see and hear what people are saying about you, like kind of without your participation in there. Like, you know, if you had the chance to like eavesdrop on a conversation where your friends were talking about you without them knowing that you were listening to them, like, of course, everyone at least is going to be a little bit curious. But like we said earlier, dude, the internet can be a very, very mean and ugly place. And I'm not saying that's how it is over there, but I think you just kind of get to a point where you're like, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and forego that for my own mental health. And I think it should be that way, but.
Oh, 100%. We don't read them anymore. But, and also, sorry, now, of course, they're coming. They're mowing the lawn over here. They're doing a great job. They're working hard. I don't mean to criticize them, but it's very loud. And I apologize to anybody listening to this podcast where the audio might not sound the best in the background, but I digress. What I was going to say is, to bounce off the hot goss idea, you're totally right. But like, that's just human nature. It's not just like a Reddit thing or an internet thing. Like, that's just what human beings do. Remember playing telephone as a kid? That game where like you'd have a line of like 15 people and somebody would say, you know, something into somebody's ear and then it would get passed along all the way down until it gets to the last person. And then you're like, okay, what did you actually say? And then what did the last person hear? Does that make sense? And like, it's always wildly different because everybody like, you know, speaks in hyperbole or dramatizes the situation or kind of changes a little bit. It's like, oh, I think it could be like, Ashley and Jared broke up. Or I think Ashley and Jared broke up. And then the next person will say, Ashley and Jared broke up. And then the next person will say, I think Ashley broke up with Jared. And then like, you know what I mean? It always just goes down until like, I heard that, you know, Ashley had a second family on the island of Oahu.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely can snowball out of control. And I think one of the biggest things that made me completely unsubscribe, but like completely be uninterested in ever checking it again years ago, I was like, there was something similar situation. Someone said about me back when like Christine and I were still talking that was like so, like, in my eyes, unbelievably false. And there's nothing you can do to like insert yourself and be like, no, this is a horribly wrong rumor. And so I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna, since I can't do that, since there's like no way for me to participate in this conversation and inform people what's going on, I'm just gonna go ahead and exit this out forever.
Yeah, it's just, you know? Like you said, ignorance is bliss in certain situations, and that definitely is true with Reddit in a lot of terms. So pretty much the moral of the story is like, post it on Reddit, your dating profile, if you're willing to get roasted. Oh my God, Lois is losing her mind. Lois, we have a very special guest coming up on the podcast. You can't speak like this. It is Dr. Jessica Shepherd, once again, the OBGYN and women's health expert. She's joining us on the podcast coming up next. All right, welcome back to Help I Suck at Dating. We have a very special guest who is on the line joining us via Zoom. She is an OBGYN and women's health expert and also the founder of Her Viewpoint, which is an online women's health forum that focuses on addressing taboo topics in a comfortable setting. It is Dr. Jessica Shepherd. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Good. How are you? It's great to be here.
Oh, we are doing well. So the first thing that I talk about, I mentioned, is about these taboo topics that you'd like to discuss in more of a comfortable setting. What taboo topics are you talking about?
Oh, man, those taboo topics range from anywhere from a lot has to do with sexuality or sexual relationships. But also when we think about a gynecologist, we also discuss STIs and things that can happen to someone in some of these interactions. But again, I always try to bring it from the approach of it doesn't have to be shameful, because I think that's a taboo topic in general, is sexuality and sexual relationships. And we have to do a better job at, you know, taking out the stigma from that.
How do you think all of these became tabooized?
Oh, I love this discussion. I could talk hours on this, but I think it has to do a lot with society and where we place the blame of if something happens. A lot of that actually has been shifted to women. So if you even think about unintended pregnancy, right? A lot of times it's the woman who's like, oh, it was your fault. And you're like, I think there were two people involved in this. I'm not sure, but that usually it happens. And then even going down to, if you were to bring up the topic of herpes, HSV, and actually, you know, has been something that's been around for a very long time, but it actually was in the 70s and 80s. They did a piece in Time magazine and put it to the forefront because there was, I guess, for lack of a better term, a lot of cases going up and people were unfamiliar with it. And so with that unfamiliarity and that uncomfortableness with the topic, it was brought to the forefront in a matter of a shameful way. And some since then, it really hasn't become something that, you know, has not come with stigma attached. And I can tell you definitely in the medical space, you know, we don't think of it stigmatized. We're just like, we know this is a virus. We know it occurs. We really are looking at how to treat you if you have an outbreak because we don't want you to be in pain. Simple as that.
And is that the big thing with herpes? Sorry, just a quick question, Jared. Is that the big thing with herpes is that an outbreak is painful? So obviously you don't want it if you can avoid it, but is that the thing with herpes is the outbreak is painful?
Yeah, I would say, and usually with the initial outbreak. So let me, you know, bring it back a few steps. With the initial outbreak is usually very painful. And viruses are very smart in the sense that because we typically don't have cures for viruses. So if you think of viruses like chickenpox is actually in the same family as the herpes virus, HIV, HPV, coronavirus. So if you look at all the viruses, we typically don't have a cure for it. But what we do have are treatments or medications that can suppress the virus in a way that it doesn't reveal what its symptom is. And so when someone has an initial herpes outbreak, it is very painful because it usually comes with blisters and nerve endings are involved, and that's why it's so painful. But typically after that, there are people who do have recurrent outbreaks, and those can be somewhat discomforting or painful. But there are a lot of people who have outbreaks and don't even know they're having an outbreak, so therefore no pain, which is usually why we see numbers of herpes very increased. I think it's very underdiagnosed because a lot of people have it and don't know it. So I always like to say, you know, people who like to make the joke about herpes or whatever, they actually could have it themselves and not know. And I'm like, well, who's the joke on that? Right. So it's one of those topics where you're like, probably, I usually tell my patients, I think probably everyone has probably been exposed to HSV at some point in their life, but a lot of people don't know that. And so we're really taking care of the population that know that they have it, that have symptoms, and we're really trying to decrease the amount of outbreaks that they have.
So you can have herpes without symptoms?
Yes.
And then there's different types of herpes, right? Because I've always learned as growing up, like, you know, a cold sore, or a cold sore, mm-hmm. right? That's like a form of herpes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or it can be.
It's the same herpes. And we're like, it's just in a different part of your body. But all of a sudden when it's below the belt, we're like, oh, but we don't walk right. around, you know, when someone has a cold sore and we're like, oh my gosh, go back inside and don't come out until that's gone.
Dude. I've got a random question.
Yeah.
It's funny too, because it feels like we're at a doctor's appointment. So
oh, you are.
I love this.
Appointment right here.
Okay, so I've been in a monogamous relationship for a little over 2 years now. Mm-hmm. Would you ever recommend for people that are in monogamous relationships to still get STD checks?
Absolutely. I tell my patients when they come in, whether they're single, married, widowed, divorced, that they should have an annual check. Because again, the whole stigmatization that if someone had something and it was unnoticed, again, we're more on the side of keeping you healthy and safe, so we would want to treat you. And I think what comes from most people who are getting the testing is that there is going to be some shame or like some blaming going on. And we're really looking at how can we optimize your health, which is information, which is knowing. And so the best way to know is to test. So it's not to say that you have to have one every week. Definitely don't do that. But I think having a baseline and then maybe annual checks together, make it a date. Go get tested together. Oh,
that would be a good day.
Yeah, it's a good
that
Friday
would be a
night
really
right
interesting
there.
Day.
Well, is it possible to get an STD from not having sex? I don't know these things.
What do you mean? What?
Like, can you get an STD? I know it's a sexually transmitted disease, but like Dean, you just said, if you're in a monogamous relationship, what's the point of getting tested? And doctor, you just said, well, you should still get tested. So my question is, how can you catch an STD? Mm-hmm. As long as you're only having sex with someone who doesn't have one?
That's a great question, because a lot of people who have HSV, most times when you go, I will preface it with this, that when you go to get your annual visit with the doctor and you ask for STD testing, many will test for the most common, such as like gonorrhea, chlamydia, and they don't test for HSV because, again, we usually only test for HSV if someone comes in with symptoms. So we're trying to rule it out. But because herpes, again, comes with such an emotional baggage with it, as far as when someone finds out they're diagnosed, they go down the rabbit hole. We typically reserve testing for unless they ask for it specifically, or if they have an outbreak that tells us, hey, this might be HSV, let's test you for it. And it's a blood test. And a lot of women will say, oh, I had my STD test. And we're like, but did you get a blood draw? And they'll say, no, I just got a swab. And I'm like, well, that probably would only include trichomonas, gonorrhea, and chlamydia. Let's add this on if you want. Because it can be Pandora's box in the sense that if you've never had an outbreak and you have it, I wouldn't treat you anyway. So if I test you and you've never had a symptom and then it comes up positive, a lot of people go down the rabbit hole. So I really have a very thoughtful, intentional discussion before someone wants to be tested, but not having a symptom, if that makes any sense.
No, that doesn't make sense.
Okay, gotcha. When you say, what do you mean by swab? When you said swab earlier.
Oh, so a swab, like when you swab the vaginal cervical canal or the penile head.
Okay.
Because I'm just thinking back to the last time I got a test, which it was, you know, 2.5 years ago. So not very long ago, but I do remember blood being drawn and I don't remember being swabbed. So I'm wondering if I was checked for everything. But
so typically, again, with a swab, did you do urine?
I did urine and I did blood draws.
So they can't catch from a swab what you can catch in urine. So that probably was what they were able to test with that. A lot of people, I will say, do not like swab tests.
No, that sounds horrible. I didn't do a swab test. I did what Dean did. I got my blood drawn and then I got urine taken. I got a urine sample.
Yeah, you guys, we do it all the time.
Yeah, that sounds like an easier way to get things done. Doctor, also, is it true? Because now I'm just like talking about like things that I have always assumed to be true about STDs. Is it possible to not, is it true that you can't spread herpes unless you have an outbreak?
That is a great question. So again, going back to what really constitutes an outbreak, a lot of people, again, can have an outbreak, not know it. And so what we call that is asymptomatic shedding. So asymptomatic shedding is when you are having a subclinical, not very obvious outbreak with blisters and sores and some tenderness. And you're having an outbreak and you have intercourse with someone not knowing, and then you can spread it, which again is why I think the numbers are so high and that it's underdiagnosed, is because you can't have that skin to skin contact, which you can transfer the virus and then transfer it to someone else.
Interesting. Okay. Well, okay, doctor, so question for you. So Jared and I, of course, in being in relationships, we're less of a risk for sexually transmitted diseases, of course. I wouldn't say zero, like you said earlier, but significantly less than a lot of our listeners out there that I would imagine are going to be, you know, hot girl summering, you know, coming out of the pandemic more or less full steam ahead. So what kind of advice would you have for the single people that are, you know, going out? Of course, like practice safe sex and all that kind of stuff. But what is your expectation for kind of what's to happen moving forward for everyone just kind of going buck wild?
Yeah, I think that for hot girl and hot boy summer, y'all are in there right too, that they should get a baseline. I think, you know, it's really important to get a baseline of testing for STD testing so that you really can have a fundamental knowledge of where you began, right? So if there is a symptom or you're suspecting that maybe you had exposure to someone, that if you were to retest, you can comparatively look at what your baseline was. Always the best thing to do. Always, again, practicing safe sex. But I think that one of the things that we should not be afraid of is having the discussion if there is an instance where you have, you know, exposure to someone, one night stands, whatever. What is it? Hot girl summer stand? Maybe we should call it that.
Yeah, there we go.
Coining terms over here on Help I Suck at Dating.
That, you know, if there is an instance where you're feeling exposed, that is the most important time when you need to get to a healthcare provider in order to get you the care that you need, the testing that you need, and not feeling ashamed and then not wanting to go in. I think that happens a lot, is that people feel so embarrassed that if there was a moment of lapse, that they don't want to go talk to someone. And that's kind of the worst thing to do, because we can help. We really don't judge. I really could care less what you were doing with your time. I'm more interested in that you got to the office to discuss possible options on how to help you. That's what we're here for, is to help.
So while we're on the topic, it's always, of course, difficult to talk those things to your doctor about. But would you be willing to lend some advice for a partner to share with maybe a previous partner of theirs that also might be you know, susceptible to getting the disease as well?
Yeah. So I love the conversation specifically for herpes, because again, no one wants to talk about it. There may be people who enter new relationships and they don't know how to express to the person that they have a diagnosis of that. So I typically like to take out words that are triggering, such as herpes. I prefer HSV. I don't like the word I have herpes. I like, in the past, I have been exposed to herpes, and therefore what I have learned is I'm very aware of my, you know, the condition. And if I do have an outbreak, I will always keep you and myself very safe. And I'll be very transparent as far as knowing that, so that, again, you can stay safe. I also think that there are other things that couples can do together as far as their conversation in order to make sure that they're transferring information properly and that everyone is aware, is sometimes when you get STD results, like I said earlier, like maybe go on a date, is I think paper results, like hard copy to show the other person, is important. Because I hear this all the time. A lot of people be like, oh, I got STD tagged, it was all negative. They didn't ever go. So I think it would behoove both parties to say, hey, here are my results, have a look, you know, have at it. And that way you can have more thoughtful conversations. And then also looking for people who do have a diagnosis of herpes, is to make sure that if they're not on medication every day to suppress, that there are other things that they can do when they do have outbreaks, or they're feeling that they're going to have an outbreak, that they can use that are over the counter, such as FemiClear. I'm a big fan of FemiClear, which is kind of like a salve which allows people to decrease the amount of pain and discomfort that they have during an outbreak that is not medication. So it's over the counter. And so I think that, you know, being cognizant of where you are in your sexual journey and being empowered by who you are, but also the relationships that you have, that people can understand these types of conversations, because the more that we, you know, have these uncomfortable conversations, the more comfortable they'll become.
Yeah. And I wanted you to give you a minute to talk about FemiClear, which are products that we can be found in CVS, Rite Aid, Walmart, walmart.com, target.com, Amazon, pretty much everywhere. So I know you're a big proponent of FemiClear. So I wanted to give you a minute to talk about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, we, because of the stigmatization with HSV, a lot has not been developed in the area of how to treat patients with it. And so, yeah, you know, science and technology has allowed us in the medical space to really have types of interventions or medications that we know work on the virus and kind of suppressing the viral load. But there are things that, you know, through FemiClear that we've seen that help patients really decrease their discomfort when it comes to the disease process.
When it comes to things like HSV and other STDs, is there a difference between how men experience them and women experience them? I mean, I'm sure there are big ones. Like, I know HPV can be a lot more severe in women, and men can just kind of carry it dormantly. But for the more common ones like HSV and the others, is there any like differences that maybe would be good for everyone to know?
Yeah. So if you look at the reproductive tract in general, men have a longer reproductive tract and women have a shorter reproductive tract, in the sense that if you have a disease such as chlamydia, a lot of times that you can have what we call asymptomatic symptoms. So someone might not necessarily have a discharge that's associated with chlamydia or gonorrhea and go unnoticed. And the reason why that's important is chlamydia is notorious for, if it goes undiagnosed and untreated for some time, that it really can creep up the reproductive tract and kind of scar what we say the fallopian tubes. And that's where eggs pass through in order to be fertilized. So it can really cause some fertility issues in the future. And this is why it's so important for people to get STD checks and testing. Also, to not be embarrassed if they feel that they've had exposure, and getting the treatment that they need for it.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing too is because I've been tested and I had gonorrhea once in my early 20s, and it's always a difficult thing to hear. But then it would have been, you know, infinitely worse had I not gotten tested and then never been able to treat it. So I think that's what a lot of people need to understand, is getting tested leads you to being treated, and then obviously, you know, either coming out of it without it or finding a way to take care of it, both the pain and everything else too. So I think that's the biggest takeaway from everything too.
Absolutely. And even that transparency in you sharing that is so helpful, because a lot of people carry that shame and they feel that they can't tell anybody that they've had that in the past, when it really is so common. If you look at the numbers and statistics, it really is a significant portion of the population that have had at some point in their life an STD.
Yeah, we're open books here on Help I Suck at Dating.
Yeah, we are. We're not lying about that one. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. For everybody listening who wants to know more about Dr. Jessica Shepherd, you can see her. You've been an expert on the Today Show, Dr. Oz, Steve Harvey. But of course, you can go visit drjessicashepherd.com to learn everything you need to know. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me. Enjoyed.
Welcome back, guys. We are about to get into my favorite segment. Unfortunately, Mark is not here to read our emails, but I'll tell you what, and I don't want anyone to share this with Mark. I think we have someone even better than him. Mark, Easton, if you're there, do you want to jump in?
I'm here.
And read some emails for us.
Thank you, Dean. What an introduction. My goodness. And I know Mark will be listening to this because he's paid to. I think he's the greatest in the world. I can't hold a candle to how he reads emails, but I'm going to try. This first one is from Anonymous. So, hi, Nick. Thanks for listening. My boyfriend and I are in our mid-30s. So the topic of marriage comes up, and with that, an engagement, and with that, a ring. I've always wanted a big diamond. For context, I'm looking at 3+ carats. He doesn't.
Holy hell.
Wow. He doesn't know anything about diamonds. So when I broke the news about my expectation for the ring I want, I let him know I'm down to split the cost. He thinks that spending this much on a ring is absolutely laughable, but he's like, hey, you know, you want what you want, and the fact you're willing to pitch in that much is great. So he's down for it. We're going to split the cost of the ring. Do you see this as emasculating? What are your thoughts? I would love to hear my favorite person on the podcast, Easton, and Mark's takes as well. Wow. What a compliment, Anonymous. Thank you.
Oh, wait. I thought you just added that little part in, but they actually wrote that. That's
amazing. I added one adjective in. But
I will say, you guys do always have incredible advice. So I see exactly where she's coming from. And for reference, I Googled how much a 3-carat diamond ring roughly costs. And you guys can correct me if you think this is wrong, but it looks like 20 to 30,000 is what a 3-carat diamond ring costs.
At the minimum.
Okay, so that's
not as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like $80,000.
Yeah, the most expensive one I see on Google at the moment is just north of 30,000. So I think that's probably a good one. And that's a 3.5 carat. So
full disclosure, I don't know how much Ashley's engagement ring was.
tell us about that actually for a second, if you don't mind sharing. So obviously you picked out the ring through the show, right?
Well, yeah. So because we went down and got engaged in paradise, obviously. You weren't there because you left the day before and then decided to come back. It was like you knew we were coming. So you're like, okay, I'm going to dip out. And then once I know Ashley and Jared are out of Mexico, I'm going to head back down, get Kaylin, and go back to the States. Anyway.
So when you were picking up the rings with Neil Lane, and I apologize for that. I wish I could have been there for that moment. That aside, so you weren't informed on the carat of the ring.
No, I knew how much the carat was going to be. I got lucky because I was communicating with one of the producers who's communicating with Neil, and they made the ring for me, which was great. And we went with design and what, you know, obviously you have to work within a construct, but they gave me a lot of wiggle room when it came to the ring, which was fantastic. But even I think Ashley's is like a little over a carat. I don't think it's that. 3 carats? Holy hell, that's ginormous. I mean, hey, good for you, Anonymous. Like, do you, girl. Yeah. But, wow, you're going to be blinging that thing around, shining everywhere.
So to put yourself in that situation then, do you ever feel emasculated because you didn't pay for the ring for Ashley? Ooh.
Not emasculated, but sometimes, especially when I see, I guess I feel bad, even though I shouldn't. I see a lot of my friends when they get engaged and they go to, you know, they're shopping for their ring, and there's like, there is this certain, you know, I don't know how to say, I don't want to say respect, but there's like this certain feeling that comes with somebody going to get the ring and carrying the ring and hiding the ring and like saving up for the ring. It really says something. So I sometimes I feel bad because it's like, oh, mine was free. Like I never went through that. Especially when I see my friends spend, you know, thousands upon thousands of dollars and save up. So I guess not emasculate, but sometimes I feel bad.
Well, I know someone, so one of the three of us has had that experience, and I hope that he shares it with us.
So, okay. When I saw the 3 carats, I too was shocked because the engagement ring I gave my wife was, she's here to confirm some of these details. Was it just, it's about a carat, right? Yeah. And here, I'll be completely honest here. This is how I suck it in. We're bearing all. When I wanted to propose to Allison, I went to her parents and I said, I love your daughter more than anything. I would like her to be my wife, like asking permission. And they said, that's fine. And they asked what I was going to do for a ring. And I was like, well, you know, I'm socking my pennies away and I'm going to get a great ring. And Allison's mother said, oh, there's a ring I have that Allison's always really liked. And it's the diamond is beautiful. The setting is complete and utter trash. So if you get a new setting, you can have the diamond. That diamond was just over a carat. I bought the setting and I kind of got off scot-free because the setting was not nearly as much as that diamond would have been. Okay, Allison, did you feel like that was an emasculating thing? Because I did not. She says no. Do you want to come over and talk on the microphone? Okay.
Yeah, come on, Allison.
Come on, here, put these headphones on. Talk to Dean and Jared.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Allison.
No, I did not feel, well, I don't know if you felt emasculated, but I liked it because it meant we get to go on like another week of vacation at the Four Seasons in Hawaii, which I felt like was a better trade.
Right. It's hard to feel emasculated on the beach in Hawaii for an extra week.
So tell them what we did with the ring after we got married.
What did we do?
We got more diamonds put in it.
Oh, I got to.
Come on.
Hold on, Allison, speak a little bit closer to the mic.
I'm actually not even wearing it right now. But I got to upgrade my settings. Easton bought the cheapest setting possible at the time. It was actually worse than the setting, the bad setting that it came in. And then like a year later, I got to pick out my own. And it's lovely. It's great. I mean, I know I'm not wearing it at the moment, but I do enjoy wearing it.
Yeah, I love it. I never wear it. Allison, so my question is, was the ring important to you at all?
Not really. I mean, I like jewelry a lot. And I think it's really cool that I have that connection to my mom, that it was hers. But that wasn't like a make or break thing for me. I think if I hadn't been given anything, I would have been a little bummed. But I didn't really care if it was like a giant ring.
All right, that's good to know. Well, the anonymous emailer who just sent us an email said she wanted a 3-carat ring.
That's crazy.
That's a lot.
That's too many carrots.
A whole 3 carrots, she's going to sink to the bottom of the ocean.
She's going to break a finger.
Oh, at least two of them. Mm-hmm. So her and her boyfriend are splitting the cost.
Oh.
So what are your thoughts about that? Do you think it's okay if the girlfriend's like, hey, this is the ring I want, I'll split the cost with you. And the boyfriend's like, okay, that's fine by me. Do you think that's okay? Or should like she just be okay with a smaller ring, or should he save up more? What do you think should happen?
I mean, that's unconventional, but it sounds like she cares more about the piece of jewelry, which I respect. Like, she, you know, why wear something every day that you don't want to wear? So I think if that works, but I feel like I would feel personally weird about it, but I don't see a problem with it.
I don't see a problem with it either. I think, like you said, she's going to be wearing it around every single day for the rest of her life. She should get the ring that she wants to wear every day for the rest of her life. And if it's the 3-carat ring, it's the 3-carat ring.
I like this too, because it shows they're already compromising. They're not even engaged yet, and they're already like, hey, this is a compromise. This is good. This is what we're going to need to do in our marriage. They're already in a healthier relationship. I like it.
I think it's great.
If I was the guy in that relationship, and let's say she didn't even offer to pay for half of it, and she was just like, I want this 3-carat ring. Then I would, as the guy, I would be like, well, what if I don't get you the 3-carat ring? It sounds like she's like willing to work with him. It's a very selfless thing. She's like, this is what I want, and I'm willing to help you get it for me. Like, that's a pretty selfless thing, in my opinion. Anonymous sounds like a real winner.
But what happens, like, she's inevitably going to lose that, because she's going to have to take it off to do any chores or go to the beach. Like, when they have to replace it, what are they going to do then? Does he still have to pay for the other half again? I don't know.
Right.
Then that's on her.
Yeah.
Maybe when you're wearing, right, then the replacement's on her. Maybe with a 3-carat ring, that is more expensive than any car I've ever owned. That's more than the down payment I just put down on my house. Maybe she'll be more careful with it.
Well, we can hope. Good luck, Anonymous.
Yeah. Thank you for your help, Allison.
Yeah, thanks, Allison. All right, let's get to Mia.
All right, this one's from Mia, just like Dean said.
Easton, actually, we got Allison's input on that, but we never really got yours. We know your story, but what's your opinion of it?
I think it rules. I think that if that's what Allison said, like if that's what she wants, and it doesn't seem like it bothers her. Like, yeah, I know that there's a certain, like, it feels good to be like, oh, I bought this ring for you, you know, that kind of thing. But here's something else. If you have all the money in the world, I've seen this happen. They'll get a giant ring and it just looks dumb. Like it's like in the shape of the Green Lantern or something like that. It's like just a stupid looking ring that they're not going to want to wear. So I don't think there's a problem with, like, you know, if she wants a ring that's crazy expensive and she's willing to pitch on it, I think that's fine. If they want a certain type of design and they want to be involved with the, like, shopping of it and design of it, I know that takes away a lot of the, like, surprise element, but I don't see a problem with that either, because this is a very important part of you know, your day. You're gonna look at that thing every single day. So that's what I had to say. The reason I told the story is that, like, my wife was very involved with the aspect of procuring the ring, and, you know, and even after we got married, we changed it up. And she she's not wearing it right now, but she likes the ring, you know, by all accounts. So, we're very happy about that.
And that's what matters most, as long as they like
it. Exactly. So that is my take. Mark cannot give his because he does not care about us. He's not here today. moving on to Mia. My question is simple. Can a bad kisser be taught how to kiss well? A few weeks back, I shared a kiss with a young man, and the kiss was so bad, I just shut it down. Also, am I wrong for assuming a bad kisser is also bad in bed?
Interesting. I will say, I'll answer the last question first. I will say, yes, you are wrong to assume a bad kisser is bad in bed. I want to say, speaking from experience, not that I was a bad kisser, but sometimes I never know how far to go with what I can share on this podcast.
No, it's always because I always wonder, like, is this going to get back to Ashley? It feels like I'm just talking to a couple of my guy friends, you know, like I can really let loose, but then I forget. Oh, wait a minute. It's not just us three.
My biggest thing is, like, is it disrespectful for me to share these stories? Like, am I disrespecting Caitlin by sharing these stories? My gut says no, but sometimes I feel like maybe it is a little bit. Anyways, I'll tell a story anyway. So, I mean, I remember going on a date a while ago, like obviously pre-Caitlin, and I kissed this girl, and it was the worst kiss I've ever had in my entire life. And then we went on a couple more dates and ended up sleeping together. She didn't improve kissing that much over time, but, I mean, she was perfectly good in bed. And even saying it out loud, I feel like kind of icky saying that, but that's from personal experience, you can be a bad kisser and still be good in bed.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember an instance in the top of my head where I kissed someone and it wasn't good. And then we ended up sleeping together and it was really good. Like I can't remember really. Maybe I'm a bad kisser. Maybe that's the issue, because I don't remember that many times where I thought, "Oh wow, that was terrible," or maybe I'm just that good of a kisser that I raise everybody else's level up. You know, I'm like the Tom Brady of kissing. If you kiss me, I'm going to make you a better kisser. Okay, silence on that one. I appreciate it. I'll digress.
I love that your whole explanation, you are all over the chart on every single thing you're saying. Maybe I'm really bad at kissing, or maybe I'm the best kisser ever.
Dean, have you met me? It's a constant monkey just like clapping the whatever those are called, the drum things. I think you can teach someone to be a better kisser, but also I advise against that because it's probably going to bring out some serious insecurities with that human being. And sometimes maybe if you're just not compatible physically, you're not compatible emotionally. I don't know.
Easton, what's your take on it?
I have also kissed young ladies that have been bad at kissing, but also good in bed. But I think with men,
hold on, wait, before you go any further, this young boy and this young lady thing, we gotta, you kissed a woman, okay, all right?
Mature woman. A very,
it's all relative. Yes. They were younger at the time of kissing.
Exactly. Okay. So I've kissed many mature women, that were bad at kissing, but good in bed. But I think with men, I think if a man is a bad kisser, there's no way he's good in the sack. I really believe that. Don't ask me how. I just believe that. And as far as teaching someone how to be a good kisser, you can, but here's the thing, the bigger question, do you want to? That's a lot of work. That's a lot of commitment, and it's a lot of time. I don't know if you really want to do that.
I'll tell you what, and why I think both of you guys are wrong is I have also dated bad kissers, like I said earlier. And you don't even really have to, like, there's no conversations that need to be had. You just need to do it enough that eventually, like, they start to A, get more comfortable with kissing, B, start to pick up new techniques, like C, like kind of like maybe like understand your perspective of the kiss, like your style of kissing, and then they start doing it themselves. It's like a learning thing. You're not going to be a great kisser the first time you do it, just like you're not going to be a great basketball player the first time you go play basketball, but you play enough basketball and eventually you get good. So I think as long as you guys, if you really like the guy, kiss him enough until he gets good at kissing. And you don't even have to like be like, hey, you suck at kissing, get better. Just like do it enough to the point where he gets more comfortable with it, and then things improve.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if you're willing to put in the time of the work, I'm all for it. I think that's going to do it for this week's episode of Help, I Suck at Dating. Thank you so much to Anonymous. Thank you so much to Mia for emailing us in. Again, it's the only reason Dean shows up to this podcast. So please keep the emails coming. You can email us at isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. That's isuckatdating@iheartmedia.com. You can also follow us on Instagram at help_i_suck_@_dating. That's right. A big thank you to, of course, Dr. Jessica Shepherd. You can go visit drjessicashepherd.com. That's drjessicashepherd.com for more information. She was extremely, extremely intelligent. Dean and I were talking about that off the podcast. Wow, she was good. We really want her to be back on the podcast soon. Dean, am I missing anything?
I think you nailed everything right on the head, Jared.
Thanks.
Hey, Easton, will you do us a favor?
Yes, yes.
Will you tell the Suck Army the next time we're going to see him?
Next week. We'll suck a little bit less. Oh, my God.
Hopefully.
I've never gotten to say that. That's so fun.
Yeah, we wanted to really include you all the way through here.
You guys are so sweet.
All right, well, since Easton kind of butchered it, be sure to tune in next week where maybe we suck just a little bit less.
Follow Help, I Suck at Dating on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.